Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to this week's afternoon satsang. We begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And it's after a week. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. And we are here to host for you this week's afternoon satsang. But before we introduce the topic, let me also tell you that we're going to have one more brother from Radio Sai who's going to join us today. So we're delighted to have Brother Sai Prakash with us. He's of course not new to any of our listeners, but we join you all in welcoming him to this week's satsang. So before we go give you a complete idea of what we're going to be talking about, one thing of course common with all three of us in the panel today is that we have all been Swami students, and we've gone through a very unique system which has for a major part played a very important role in molding our character, molding what we are today. We owe a lot of what we are today to the system which Swami created, which is the backbone of the Satya Sai educational system, that is the hostel of the university, of the schools. Sai Prakash is here. I think he's going to talk to us more about, because he's been in Swami's hostels for the longest period amongst all of us, second being I think Arvind and me being the least, but nevertheless the influence is definitely overwhelming, and so we're here to talk about that. But one particular statement which Swami used to say, which we've heard so many times from our teachers and from Swami himself, is going to be something like the motion of the day. So I'll ask Arvind to introduce that to all of us.
Well, Prem, you stated that Sai Prakash is number one, I'm number two, and you're number three. But you know, the beauty of Swami's education system is such that it doesn't depend on the number of years. Swami has always been about quality and not quantity. One could be there for 30 years and not learn anything. One could be there for 30 minutes and learn enough for a lifetime.
That's as much a scare as a consolation.
So, you know, putting that disclaimer, because, you know, even when it came to talking about a Sai student, Swami would often say that just because you are a student in the university does not automatically qualify you as a Sai student. A student of Sai is one who follows and studies Swami's teachings. So therefore, while it is a privilege and honor to spend more and more years in Swami's educational system, it is also a responsibility, and it is in no way a claim to a greater glory or greater spiritual splendor. Swami often, you know, even on one occasion when Swami was asked about the different sadhanas that a student could possibly do in order to attain the ultimate goal of one's life, this question was posed to Swami naturally, because if we look at the schedule of a student in the hostel who is at any of the hostels, that is in Prashantiniliam or Brindavan or Anantapur, it is so packed that it is difficult to imagine that such students can become spiritual heroes or people who are having a spiritual thirst, because the yogis and the sages and saints that we know spend all their time in meditation or whatever spiritual activities, whereas here it is not like that. So the question was asked as to if there are students who really wish to pursue spirituality as the sole goal, what is the best sadhana? And I don't know if these were the exact words used in phrasing that question, but I do know the exact words that Swami gave in answer. Swami said that the hostel schedule is the only sadhana that my students need to do. It was like a shocker, if I can say, because it seemed as simple as this. You know, there's a hostel schedule, which maybe in a short while we will list out. You just follow this and that's enough. There's no other sadhana one need to do. Is achieving the ultimate goal so easy? That is a question that comes. But if we have a deeper introspection, I'm sure we'll realize why it is not as easy as it appears in the first place, and what could possibly be the rationale or the logic behind Swami saying that hostel schedule is the only sadhana that my student needs to do.
You know, just thinking on the lines of what you just mentioned, just one thought came to me. It's interesting because Swami has not kind of differentiated the schedules for children of the primary school and children of the higher secondary school and children of the institute. If you know, that's something which just came to me, like, okay, you are small children, you don't have to get up in the morning, you don't have to do Suprabhatam, nothing of that sort. There's a schedule that is meant for everybody across all age groups. And you know, that is something which he sets in motion, which should continue with you all through your life, and it should become such an integral part of your life. Swami, but I don't know how many of us are still following that schedule right now, but we know what is good for us. At least that's what we are left with when you come out from the college.
You know, that is a real interesting point. Swami, we have often heard Swami say that KG to pre-PG education is free. Now if we think of it, KG to PG, the schedule is common with possibly slight alterations made as per the need. That too, it is not alteration that Swami has made, that we take the liberty of making and thinking Swami will not mind.
No, I mean, okay, if it is slightly half an hour this way, that way, it's fine. But the schedule remains the same. That's what I'm trying to bring.
And one beautiful thing is, when we speak to many students, a lot of them come from pampered background.
Okay. Right?
No, they're not used to this rigorous schedule. But there are a lot of others who come expecting a much more rigorous schedule.
There
are a lot of others who believe, who have really done a lot of sadhana to come and become Swami students. They are actually taken aback by the leisurely nature in which the hostel is sometimes carried on. Because this particular statement which you mentioned, where Swami said that all that I want as sadhana from my students is follow the hostel schedule, was repeated by Swami many times when Swami would come to speak to students, when a lot of students will get involved in very extreme yogic practices or meditations and things like that. When Swami would come to tell them that it is not necessary to do all these things. It's almost like when you get into a train, all that you need to reach the destination is be in the train. It doesn't matter whether you're sitting or standing on one leg or standing upside down inside the train. As long as you keep yourself safe in the train, you are sure to reach the destination.
It's like this, if you have a higher goal in life, and in spirituality especially, you have to forget that you're pursuing the goal.
Right, absolutely.
You know, in a sense, the more you try to involve and you say, I have to do this rigorous thing, that is uppermost in your mind. And your mind is occupied with that rather than experiencing it. You know, just to simplify, I heard from one of our professors, the story of Gautam Buddha, slight digression here. No, somebody told Gautam Buddha that you just concentrate on the tip of your nose and you will get realization. So that's exactly what he did for 6 years. Can you believe it? 6 years he sat and then focused entirely on the tip of his nose. And every day, at the end of the day, he would say, nothing has happened today. Nothing has happened today. Then one day he said, to hell with realization. You know, let anything happen. And he just sat, and that day he realized. Because your mind is occupied. Your mind is thinking that I have to achieve something. I have to realize something. What Swami drives you gently to is that you are already in a state of realization. You have to just be. I mean, that's what it is.
You know, fantastic thought. And Prakash, we believe that nothing is ever a digression here, because we know that everything that we are speaking here is just being prompted inside by Swami, and this is precisely what someone needs to hear, and we have had so many instances like
correct.
That.
Correct, that's right.
So, I just felt, before we proceed further, let's let our listeners get an idea about what is the schedule that we are talking about. So, Prem said some find it too rigorous. Prem also said that some find it hardly any taxing.
A bit relaxed.
Is this a schedule for a spiritual aspirant, or for that matter, any other aspirant? Whether one is aspiring excellence, is this a schedule for any aspirant for excellence? So, many may already know, but for the benefit of this discussion and for our listeners, I'll just briefly read out the schedule. It is more or less like this, with about 15-20 minutes here and there, up or down. So the morning bell rings at 5 a.m. Everybody gets up. 5 to 5:30 is waking up and ablutions. 5:30 to 5:50 we have Suprabhatam and morning prayers.
Of course, in that first half an hour there is nice music played in the sound system in
exactly.
the hostels. It's very nice devotional.
We wake up to some
very nice devotional music, and many of the songs we know by heart because of the number of times we have heard them.
And yes, it is nice. You know, music has been known to have this kind of positive effect.
Just on a lighter note, I remember one of the songs which used to be played there mm-hmm. used to be like, you know, the world is unreal and everything is Maya.
Okay.
There used to be a classmate of mine who would say, early in the morning, what inspiration do you get to do anything when you play hear the song?
And then 5:30 to 5:50, after hearing the song that the whole world is Maya, you get a chance to focus on what is true. That is God, spirituality. We have morning prayers and Suprabhatam. 6 to 7:30, well, favorite time for a few, terrible times for others. It is morning exercises, jogging and games. That is 6 to 7:30. Then 7:30 to 8:30, we have again where you can have your bath and refresh and breakfast. 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock is college, the first session of college. Then from 12 to 1 o'clock, there's a break where you have lunch. Then 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the evening, again there is college. 4 to 4:30 is something like tiffin and snacks. 4:30 you reach the mandir, Prashantiniliam mandir This is what I'm telling is the Prashantiniliam schedule. It's slightly different in Anantapur and Brindavan because 4:30 they don't go to the mandir. Maybe 5:15 they go to the mandir. So it's in the mandir, and the mandir session gets over around 6 o'clock. 6 to 7 is left for recreation, hobbies, games, self-reliance, activities. So in the other hostels, which is Anantapur and Brindavan, these two are slightly changed. The recreational activity games comes a little earlier and the prayer is shifted later. That's the only difference. Then 7:30 to 8:30 we have dinner. 8:30 to 10 o'clock at night we have study hours, academic study hours. 10 o'clock there is night prayer. You get a glass of milk as if you wish to, and then you go to sleep. So this is in general the hostel schedule that is followed across all age groups.
And I think one thing which is immediately perceivable in this is how limited is the time which is given for studying. Right? You know, it really, because I remember once when I was coming for darshan, I met one person on the way, because we used to come walking in the lines. There was one devotee who was probably coming to Parthi for the first time. He was looking at all of us and says, "Who are all of you? Where are you all going?" And I just said, "We are all Swami students, and Swami has a university, we study there." So on the way from the hostel to the mandir, he was asking us about the schedule and what you do and where are you going now. So you go and spend the whole evening in the mandir. And at the end of it, he said, when do you people study?
That's right.
Right? Because he said, when do you study? I mean, you're students in the university, you're all doing masters, and in fact, this is more or less the schedule even the 12th standard students follow.
Yeah.
So they ask, you know, when do you get to study? But I think that itself is a message where when you have a schedule which is balanced, you excel in not just, you know, spirituality, but you excel even in regular academics.
No, look at Sai Prakash. I mean, his academics results, possibly he was not the class topper, but then they are good. There are good academic results. He's a sitar player. He plays the harmonium. He's an artist. He handles the camera. If you look, it definitely feels that at least 4 or 5 talents that he has got would have required a rigorous 4 hour per day, 5 hour per day kind of practice.
I think it's quite common sense. In fact, even biology we study, any land which is used for cultivating only one type of crop actually becomes infertile over a period of time.
Crop rotation.
Yeah, they suggest crop rotation.
And mixed cropping.
Right, mixed cropping and
grow multiple crops
in different seasons over the in one particular year.
There's one point in, you know, you just read out the timings for the schedule of the hostel. There's one point that just came to my mind, that there is no restriction on how early you want to get up. There is restriction on how late you sleep.
Right, exactly.
Because Swami always believed in early to bed, early to rise. So, it has been my experience, and Swami has kind of backed it up. And he said that 1 hour of studying in the morning is equivalent to 2-3 hours during the day, because your mind is very fresh at that time. And he would always encourage, there are students who would get up at 4 o'clock, who would get up at 3:30, 4. And you know, that Brahma Muhurtam that Swami always mentioned is very, very vital for any kind of work you want to do. Now, musicians get up and they want to practice at that time. Artists would get up and try to, because their mind is very fresh. And, you know, quite apart the students and those who have been in this schedule, you would look at the life of any successful person. Be it a business entrepreneur, you look at artists, musicians, anybody. They do, especially musicians, they have to get up in the morning. They get up and they do their 1 or 2 hours of riyaz early in the morning. Only then, you know, because it's a natural thing. The mind is so fresh. And whatever you do, it has a triple impact.
In fact, when Sai Prakash spoke about this Brahma Muhurtam time, I was reminded of how Swami so beautifully has divided the day. You know, on many occasions Swami has said this, and I remember in Thrai Vrindavan, Swami narrating this. He said that, you know, in the day there are 24 hours which are divided into 8 hours of sattvic time, correct, 8 hours of rajasic time, 8 hours for tamasic time. Tamasic is sloth time, so it should be utilized for sleeping. Rajasic is activity time where you should do things that are important in day-to-day life. Sattvic is a very holy time. You should do things and activities in that time which are not important only in your day-to-day, current day, but also for your future. And future not only in terms of this life, across lifetimes. And Swami even gave the timings for that. Swami said, sattvic 8 hours is morning 4 o'clock to morning 8 o'clock, evening 4 o'clock to evening 8 o'clock. Rajasic 8 hours is from morning 8 o'clock to evening 4 o'clock. And tamasic 8 hours is from night 8 o'clock to early morning 4 o'clock. You know, if we see roughly the whole schedule, it is mapped along this. Night 8 o'clock to morning 4 o'clock is more or less the rest time. Morning 4 o'clock to morning 8 o'clock is the time when you pursue your spiritual activities, your music, your games, your job, everything. And the morning 8 o'clock till evening 4 o'clock, the rajasic time, is when you are most of the time in your school or college, studying and doing activity. It is so fantastically mapped for this, and it is thrilling to know that there is also a kind of a time, correct time for doing kinds of activities, and it has been mapped. And in fact, a spiritual aspirant who is not part of the college also will be following some sort of a schedule like this. Because whenever I've met many people who have spirituality as one of their top priorities, I see that going to bed early at night, waking up early in the morning is definitely a priority for them. So, unconsciously, we have been following a schedule of possibly spiritual aspirants and yogis, but we just don't know it.
And it's interesting, as Sai Prakash was saying, that there is a limit on what time you go to sleep, but not when you wake up. It's very clear there that, you know, we might call it tamasic, and we have the tendency of trying to color that guna in a darker shade by saying that it's bad. But I think now scientifically, in one of our discussions, we were talking about how now the scientists believe that it is the time when you sleep, a lot of reorganization of ideas happen in the brain.
Oh,
what you've collected,
yes,
during the day.
Okay.
A lot of clarity comes. That's why when you wake up in the morning, you know, there is this very popular adage where yeah, you said, you know, you sleep over it.
Sleep over a problem.
And you'll be able to find a solution. And that's why it's, Swami would say, in fact, I think one of the Thrai sessions Swami said that you can wake up early and study, but I wouldn't suggest waking up earlier than 4 o'clock. So I would say, wake up early, but even that early, don't try to wake up at 2:30, 3 and do that.
Correct.
Wake up at 4, at best 4:30, if you're able to, you know, sit down to studying. By 4:30, it's ideal. And also it reminds me of one conversation we had with late Raja Reddy Garu.
Mm-hmm.
Once some of our boys had gone to meet him, he had come for Swami's darshan, and a question which he would always ask, you know, especially students who go to meet him, he'll ask, what time do you wake up? And apparently one of the boys said, I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning or something. And the thing he said immediately was, half your day is over. He said, by 6:30, your day is over. Half your day is over. Hmm. The 3 hours in the morning is the most productive time of your life. And every day if you wake up after that, what's the point? You might as well sleep till 10 or 11.
I know there is a question. Like people say, what's wrong? There are so many successful people who wake up late. You know, they think that having sleeping till 6:37 or 7:30 is the right thing to do. They say that's what gives me adequate rest, and then they are quite successful in life. No, there's no challenge on that. But the thing is, they can do much better. They can do much better if they are achieving 50%. They can achieve 80% if they give themselves the chance of this early morning slot.
Hearing both of you, I feel so terrible, because my usual getting up time is 6:30, 6:40. And now I'm realizing that if 6 o'clock was half day waste, I'm wasting more than half my day. And I also, you know, have seen it personally in my own life, because, you know, I feel like writing a lot. I do a lot of blogging. And before, my thing would be that after everything is done, everybody's gone to bed, it's peaceful, I sit around 10:15 and start blogging. I used to see that many times by the time I've done with that particular blog, it's like 12:30, 12:40. Because I feel morning I will need some time to, usually I publish in the morning, so I feel morning I need time to publish it. I need an hour or so to publish it, so therefore let me be done with the composing part of it in the night. It is only recently I noticed one amazing thing. If I just gather all my ideas and, as you rightly suggested, sleep over it at night, rather than, you know, try to finish it by 12:40, instead of that, if I sleep by 10:40, 2 hours before, and get up by, say, 5:15, within an hour, I'm able to complete the blog, which would have otherwise taken 2 hours for me to write. And, you know, so I get up at 5:15, by 6:30, my blog is done. By 7:30 or 8, I'm done with, you know, even arranging and publishing it. Otherwise, it would be that I get up at 7:30 and now I have to begin the process. It takes me almost till 9:30. And really what Raja Reddy sir said and what Sai Prakash is saying is really true. I have changed the schedule only because I feel that I'm able to do the same thing 20-30% faster and even better in terms of quality and error-free nature. And if this is what is happening by getting up at 6:15, I'm just thinking how wonderful if I'm able to really manage and get up by 4:30 every day.
You know, the beautiful thing is how sometimes Swami made us follow some of these disciplines. Mm-hmm. Because I remember when we were all of us were studied in Vrindavan, when we used to come, we had this very beautiful chance of the permission to sleep in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Mm-hmm. Right? In those days, when Swami was staying in that mandir, in the main mandir, many times, I think it's a practice when youngsters, we all sleep together, we tend to keep chatting with each other and sleeping. Mm. So many times those days, students used to have this thing of they'll be sleeping and they would find some torchlight coming on their face. And it would be coming right from Swami's bedroom.
Oh.
Swami would be telling that you're disturbing me. And the next morning, Swami will call the warden or some senior teacher and tell them, you know, these boys, they sleep around the mandir, they keep on chit-chatting, they don't, you know, they keep disturbing me. And I think it's an open secret that Swami never sleeps in the night. But just that idea of, you know, oh, so we're disturbing Swami, we're sleeping around.
You know,
things like that.
I heard from one of the old students.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really clear and I don't remember the name. Possibly even Ravi Kumar sir was there as a part of the discussion. How this schedule actually was formed.
Okay.
And this happened in the car garage in Vrindavan. Because that was the first hostel that Swami started. And in the car garage, Swami said, now boys, you are in a sort of a hostel and we have to make a schedule. And Swami was seated there and all the boys were sitting around. And he said, see, I will tell you, you write down. And then Swami started 4 o'clock in the morning. Swami, please. Okay, 4:30. Swami, please, Swami. Okay, keep it 5 o'clock.
Bargaining.
Literally, this was, this is how I'm very sorry because I'm not able to recollect the person who was there And he told me, it's so vivid in my memory, but I'm forgetting the name of the person. But he said, this is how the schedule was formed. Swami was seated there on a regular chair, and then all the students around him, and then Swami, please, 5, okay, 5 o'clock, last, there's no bargaining after that. Mm. So 5 o'clock, bell will ring, and then you got to get up, and then Suprabhatam. So, and then he said, no, jogging undali, morning you should go for jogging. Swami, December it will be very cold and all, nothing, no concession, you have to go. So, you know, every step, there were students who were trying to bargain. And so lovingly, Swami is giving them concession. And I think he had that comfortable margin he started with. So that
he knew what boys will bargain for.
What they'd bargain
and,
for.
And the other interesting thing is, see, it is said in the spiritual journey, the ultimate state is to go beyond the gunas. But you overcome tamas with rajas, you overcome rajas with sattvic. That's how it is, you know, when you get up, you're lazy. Jogging is rajas, rajasic, mm-hmm. and you know, it makes you overcome the tamas of your sleep. Mm-hmm. And after that, after all the intense activity of the day, you again come back to, you know, prayer, spirituality, mm-hmm. which is sattvic by nature. You were saying, Prem, about how if we notice the schedule, there is not much emphasis on academics. And fine, it is fine, I say, because when Swami started the university, he said, my university, the emphasis is not only academic. It is value-based educare, as he said it. Fine, okay, so academic is possibly not your top priority. But look at the schedule and tell me, Prem, what is the top priority then? Is spirituality your top priority? Because spirituality also has the same amount of time. For studying, you have 2 hours. For spirituality, you have two hours. For games, you have about 2 hours. You know, what is the focus? What is your top priority? Because though you may say that there's not so much emphasis on education, I feel there's no emphasis on any single thing. Everything seems to be like equally important or equally unimportant. That's how the schedule seems to be made. And I feel that's a very, very special thing about the schedule, because the emphasis is not on any single thing, but the emphasis is entirely on balance. Balance between everything.
I think it's a important point for all those people who are trying to introduce value education into school, into academics and all that. Mm-hmm. Swami made it very clear. In fact, I think we have only one period in the schedule which says that this is a period for spirituality.
Okay.
Something like awareness, I think, mm. which was also included in the recommendation of one of the teachers. It was not like Swami's own thing.
Because yeah, there's an awareness
right,
class.
Because it was never like Swami's, it is not like, you know, you eat this at this point of time. You know, you do this at this point of time. You don't have a schedule for breathing. It's almost like that. Swami never wanted that you have 4 hours of academics, then you have a break and you have a value class, then you have 4 hours academic. Values always had to be
part of
whatever is imparted. I think Swami always intended that to be. The moment you say that we have a moral class, a value class, especially in schools outside, you always have that, you know, you have a moral science class, like you have a social science, you have a moral science. You tend to think that anything that's related to morality or values will be relegated only to that 1 hour. Don't bring it into academics. Mm. Swami never wanted that.
If I can try to make an analogy for what you said, Prem, if our student life can be a book, Swami did not want 10 pages or 15 pages in the book to have what we consider as spiritual content. Let there be any content, he wanted every page to be spirituality or values. Because, as you said, it's not that specifically we keep some time, this is the time we do spiritual activity. Every act we do, every word we speak, every thought we think, everything that happens throughout the day is suffused with human values. Because this is the only way you can nurture a human, a spiritual environment. Any other thing is only ephemeral, and it is so artificial. It brings about no change, because if we see, almost every school in the world today has some moral class or awareness class or some kind of an hour where you supposedly dedicate to spirituality. In my previous school in Bombay, we had this moral class. You know what would happen towards the end of the year when I was as young as sixth grade? The moral hour, other teachers will be fighting to take over it because, hey, after all, you know, that's not important. I need to cover my physics, science syllabus. I need to cover my math syllabus. So at the end of the year, it's not there. And because the end of the year is not there, you know, moral values, we basically would have some stories and some question answers after that. And even the questions would be dictated, answers given. We just, you know, mug it up like how we mug up formulae in mathematics. And come and spew it out on the paper and get marks. How will that impart any kind of morality education?
I think that's the beauty of the way Swami used to. For him, it was not about exams, it was not about marks, it was not about evaluation. I remember in 3E once, lecturer Ravikumar sir was narrating an incident. I think after the summer course, we have this exam which was usually conducted, and the one who tops that exam gets a beautiful gift from Swami. In the 70s, there was the one on Bhagavad Gita, the summer course. So after that, one of the questions in the exam was, what are the three promises that Krishna gives in the Gita, something like that.
The paritranaya sadhanam.
Right. And those three verses.
Yada yada hi dharmasya.
Ananyas chintayantoma, in that one. So Swami was coming around during that exam, you know, like a flying squad invigilating. So apparently when sir was coming to this question, answering this question, Swami was standing by his side and looking over his shoulder. And Swami read the question, and sir knew the answer. He was about to write it, and Swami looked at him and said, "Do you know the answer?" He said, "Yes, Swami." Then Swami asked him, "What is the answer?" Okay. In the exam hall, all the other students are sitting and writing. So he had to, I think, tell out the answer loudly. And almost there, Swami took on from there and kind of elaborated on that. So imagine, it's an exam hall, it's an evaluation, you're supposed to tell what you've learned.
And you're getting a personal divine discourse there.
And there it becomes another classroom.
And more importantly, it becomes fulfillment of the vow. Ananyas chintayan toma, you think of me, I'm there even in the exam hall, right next to you.
Wow.
That's the thing, you know, you nowadays you talk about constant evaluation, internal evaluation. You don't have a moment where you stop and write an exam. I think with Swami it was like that. It was like constant learning, not evaluation, but even an exam hall is not a wrong place to have lesson.
When you are talking about this thing that everything is spiritual, you cannot divide this and that, it's really not out of place to mention the incident which Professor Venkatraman had.
Right.
You know, he has mentioned it a couple of times. Swami was there in the institute audiovisual room giving a talk to the MBA students, and he was talking about marketing. And then in that process, he materialized a gold pen. And he says, how do you price this product? So he spoke to them about marketing. He spoke how we should price the product and what is the specialty, how do you highlight, all that. And then very lovingly, he gave the pen to Professor Venkatraman because he was the vice chancellor. So he was there in the class. Swami told, you keep this pen and use it well. So I think the next day or a couple of days later, Swami came for darshan, and Swami asked, where is the pen I gave you? Where is the gold pen? He said, Swami, I have kept it very safely at home. Then what are you going to use it for? He said, Swami, I want to use it for all spiritual content. I want to write your discourses with A. Swami almost lifted his hand to give him one tight slap. Swami said, everything is spiritual. Don't differentiate. Never differentiate. Never. That pen, you use it for everything. You mean to say that office work is not spiritual? You mean to say what you're signing in the ad block, that is not spiritual? Everything is spiritual. Use it for everything. So, you know, that is the spirit which, you know, percolated into every activity that was there in the hostel. And every activity that we were made to do was, you know, if you think of it now, maybe 10 years or 15 years after you come out from the hostel life, you sit and go with a positive attitude. See, many students, when they are in the hostel, they are so, they have such preconceived notions that, you know, I have been a hero if I manage to miss a Suprabhatam session. Okay. Or, you know, somehow we are not very keen. We don't understand the importance of it. But, you know, in retrospect, when you come out and then now you're in a state in life where you're not bound to any schedule. But this is the time when you focus back and you think, what are its actual benefits?
This is exactly what happened to one of our students, you know. His name is Shirish Patel, and he's from the 96-98 MBA batch. Sai Prakash said, and we all know it, we have also experienced in our own batches where people would boast over their ability to bunk Suprabhatam undetected, you know. I didn't go. I'm not a slave like you, having been forced to get up at 5 o'clock. I'm free. I'm free, you know. I can sleep till 6 o'clock.
I think this is, before you continue, this is one more beautiful aspect of the hostel where, you know, your desire to do something which is outlawed, you know, is fulfilled in such small acts. You know, yeah. Being outside, probably you had to do something really bad to fulfill that.
Yes.
You know, that streak
break into
of,
a lab or
right, of that rebel in you. But here it's like sleep a little extra, get one chapati more than you are entitled to, and you feel you have broken the law.
Yeah, and you're able to, you know, satisfy your animal side there in such harmless acts. But you know, today, as Sai Prakash said, when you look back, you really feel, were you free when you actually slept till 6 o'clock, or were you a slave when you slept till 6 o'clock? At that moment, you thought possibly you were free. I am not a slave like you, having been forced to get up at 5:15. Today, I feel I am a slave. That's why even if I wish to, I am not able to get up at 5:15. That comes in retrospect, and that's exactly what happened to Shirish Patel. He has written a beautiful article about it. In that article, he mentions, you know, he mentioned that 98, when they were passing out, Swami would speak to the passing out batch. They were all in the interview room. And he got up and he said, Swami, please be with us throughout the day during every act that we do. Swami said, I will do, but you are not giving me the chance. What should you do to give me the chance? So he did not know. Swami said, you should pray. Keep praying and start with a prayer. You know, he said this hit him in many ways. One thing he remembered was, when he was a child, his mother used to say, start the day praying to God. And later Swami got introduced in his life, she would say, start the day praying to Swami. He did not like it. He felt it was a burden. It was, you know, you're shackling me, as we think. It's bondage by you making me shackled to the schedule. So he told his mother, mother, I am not going to pray. If I should pray to Swami, no, let Swami himself tell me. He said, it was Swami telling him that I am not able to help you because you are not praying to me, pray to me. And then he said, throughout his hostel, he took hostel life, he took pride in bunking, escaping this suprabhatam. And even if he went for the morning prayers, he said his body was in prayer. In mind, he would do other, in quotes, important things. Let me think of the formula, let me think what I revised, what's the use of, you know, chanting a prayer or singing. But he said, once he passed out of hostel, that habit continued even into his professional life, where when he gets up, the first thing in his morning is the jobs that he has left unfinished, the things that he has to do. And even before he arrives at his workplace, he's already burdened and tired and fatigued. So because though I'm physically not doing the work, it's going on in my head. That is when he remembered his training, his schedule, and he said that he made it a point that he would chant Hanuman Chalisa and Sai Gayatri and then pray in the morning. And he says, not long, 15 minutes. See, in that 15 minutes, the kind of insights that I get, the kind of peace I get, the kind of calm I get, it prepares me in the best possible manner. Even if the worst day is lined up ahead of me, it doesn't become such a bad day because of the prayer. And even if a beautiful day is lined up ahead of me, if I don't do the prayer, it could turn out to be a bad day. And he says, prayer is so vital. I'm so grateful that I had this practice and training. And I only feel bad that I didn't take it seriously and do it at that time also. So when we look at this, you know, these incidents, it becomes very clear. He, a successful person, is saying this, that, you know, what I learned in hostel is very, very important. It is very nice. So how can one say that there is no emphasis on success or spiritual success or anything? Because a person who is able to follow it is really able to get all kinds of success, be it spiritual, materialistic, or influence worldly wise.
Indeed, I think we have a lot more to say on this topic. We'll take a short break, we'll continue. And I think after about 40-45 minutes of talk, we are still at Suprabhatam. Right. So we'll take a short break. The listeners, don't go away. We're going to continue our discussion on the other side of the song. Krishna. Mom!
ಬಿಲ್ ನಿರಾವೆ ಜಾಜಿ ಪೂಲು ದೇವೆ ಮನ ಸುಖದೆ ಚಲಿಸಿ ನೋಡೆ ಮನ ಕೊರ ಕೈ ವಚ್ಚಿ ನಾಡೆ
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we are exploring the different meanings of one statement which Swami used to make to all students, which he said that the only sadhana that I expect from my students is for them to follow the schedule of their hostel. You know, when you look at it, when we started speaking, you, Saiprakash, you said about how the hostel schedule came by. And I remember when I was in Vrindavan, one thing which I found very intriguing was this aarti which is offered in the hostel and in the Sai Ramesh hall would have only two sets of Narayan Narayan being sung.
Okay.
But in Prashanti Nilayam, it will always be the three sets.
Yes. Correct.
So I used to wonder, what is this, Swami, why this Vrindavan is having one less, are we doing lesser Namasmarna than, you know, than the students in Prashanti Nilayam? And one of the teachers told us why it is so. In those days, boys never used to come to the Ramesh Hall or the Sai Ramesh shed in those days, Sai Ram shed in those days, for darshan.
Mm-hmm.
Swami would come out of the bungalow and walk into the hostel, which was that garage which you said, have a bhajan session in the hostel and then come out for darshan to the Sai Ram shed. Okay, and sometimes Swami would spend a lot of time there speaking to boys. So when this aarti starts, Swami will start becoming restless. In the sense, devotees are waiting. So Swami would say, two Narayan Narayan is enough, stop with that. And Swami would say, no, devotees are waiting, so don't keep going on and on. You quickly tell and I'll take aarti and go. So almost like a memory of that beautiful moment, you know, when Swami would come and spend the time in the hostel every day, this two Narayan Narayan became a tradition in Vrindavan. And we, you know, a question which is always asked, especially when it comes to in the customs and the traditions and all that, you say that there are meaningless rituals. We don't realize that many times some of these rituals are there to remind us of something which is so special like this. For instance, you know, there is this incident which happens in the life of Bhakt Ram Das, where Rama and Lakshmana come in a form and return the money which he owes to the Tanisha. And the Tanisha, actually what he does is he sends money for the building of that temple.
Correct.
For the completion of the temple or something like that. I think it's a tradition which still is there. The government of Andhra Pradesh sends money to Bhadrachalam during that particular anniversary of the temple's built. Just in memory of, you know, that the Lord came down to protect the honor of one of his devotees.
In fact, that is the most beautiful part of, you know, quote unquote, being contemporary of the avatar. Because he is the subject of worship. He is the object. He is not the object. He is the subject. He is the subject. And he is there with infinite power, with all the power, to give you compensation, to you know, change what is meant to be, and concession for his students. It is love. It is pure love. You know, if you just think of it, morning 5 o'clock, the bell rings, and you are woken up. And then whom do you go and see in the dining hall? You see Swami's photo. And you are going to pray to him. You are going to chant Sai Suprabhatam, Swami Suprabhatam. And in the evening you are going for darshan and you are seeing Swami there. So, you know, is it that Swami wanted that all the students in the hostel should worship him? We never felt that way because, you know, everything is with love. Everything is with love. So then, if Swami is the embodiment of love, if Swami really loves his students so much, then why should he put them into so much of a torture? Why should he make them get up 5 in the morning? It's not easy for everybody to get up at 5. But, you know, as we just discussed, then in retrospect, we understand that that is his love. Because that is ultimately good for you. It's not that he's torturing you by making you get up in the morning. So I was just thinking, you know, we can have one or two words on what exactly happens in the morning session, prayer session. There is 21 times we chant Omkaram. And in fact, many discourses are there where Swami has told what is the importance of chanting Omkaram. And of course, we don't have time to go into all that now. But a specific way of chanting Omkaram where you have equal importance given to the A, U and M. And there are a lot of scientific research that has been done which say that by chanting that that elongating that makara, it's very good for your heart. It's very good for your internal organs. And it kind of stimulates good health in you. So there is a scientific reason behind chanting it 21 times. Apart from that, when you come to the Suprabhatam, see, the Suprabhatam, every stanza ends with Sri Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhatam. So, Uttishto Tishta Partisha. So, what is the meaning of Uttishto? I mean, you are not singing, he is not waiting every morning for you to sing Suprabhatam.
Uttishta means arise, awake.
Arise, awake. So, Swami is, in fact, we should mention that the Suprabhatam was composed by a great scholar from Venkatagiri. Tirumalachari, when he saw Swami and came in contact, he composed the Suprabhatam. And you know, we had interviewed some of the old devotees, that is Veena Vijayamma and her mother. Swami had told them to tune it.
Okay. So give a tune for the Suprabhatam.
And how Swami himself, there was a challenge musically. Where they were, because compared to the Tirupati, that
Venkateshwara
Suprabhatam and Swami's Ishwarama is 4 alphabet, and then the
Kausalya
is 3 alphabets. So they were explaining to us, there was some musical dilemma, and they didn't know what to do it, and you know, with one smile, Swami sorted that out. And the Suprabhatam, Swami started having it chanted even in the mandir. See, the mandir also, the same schedule was being followed. Like the bell would ring and then you would have 21 omkaras, then you will have Suprabhatam. Of course, you have Nagar Sankirtan as well in the mandir. So, for the hostel, Swami said Omkaram and Suprabhatam. So, the whole idea of Suprabhatam, as we know now, is to awaken the spark of divinity within us.
So, I think, Sampraket, before you explain anything more, I happen to have the recording which we did of the Suprabhatam.
Oh.
Which is part of our product. I think it's so beautiful, beautifully rendered by our brother Ravi Kumar.
Yes.
I think we should just listen to a little bit of it. Of course, the entire clip might take too much of the time, but maybe
wonderful.
2 or 3 minutes of that recording.
Sure.
Ishwaramba Suta Shriman Purva Sandhya Pravartate ಉತ್ತಿಷ್ಟ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿಷ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದೈವಮಾನ್ನಿಕಂ ಉತ್ತಿಷ್ಟೋತ್ತಿಷ್ಟಪರ್ತೀಶ ಉತ್ತಿಷ್ಟ ಜಗದೀಪತೆ ಉತ್ತಿಷ್ಟ ಕರುಣಾಪೂರ್ಣ ಲೋಕಮಂಗಳ ಸಿದ್ಧಯೇ ಚಿತ್ರಾವತೀ ತಟ ವಿಶಾಲ ಸುಶಾಂತ ಸೌದೇ ತಿಷ್ಟಂತಿ ಸೇವಕ ಜನಾಸ್ತವ ದರ್ಶನಾರ್ಥಂ ಆದಿತ್ಯಕಾಂತಿರನುಭಾತಿ ಸಮಸ್ತಲೋಕಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯಸಾಯಿ ಭಗವನ್ ತವ ಸುಪ್ರಭಾತಂ.
You know, Sai Prakash, as you rightly said, this is for awakening the divinity within. And you know, you start the day with God. Naturally, as Shirish Patel discovered, things are bound to go wonderful because you're starting it on the right note. And more than waking up Swami, because you know, if it is supposed to be waking up Swami, many times I think he should have continued to sleep because we have failed in our duty. More than that, it is for awakening our own inner Swami. And because for all of us, Swami is the center of our lives, we sing Swami Suprabhatam. You can sing Venkateshwara Suprabhatam. You can sing based on which God it is, deity it is. And in fact, the concept of Suprabhatam itself is that. There is a Suprabhatam for every deity, because based on what you consider as divinity, you awaken that divinity within you. It can just be replaced with another prayer where you, basically the idea is to start the day with God. And when the day begins well, as they say, well begun is half done.
Right.
That is the impact it has throughout the day.
And talking about the Omkarams, the 20-year Omkarams, I think many times Swami would say this, you know, that there is a hotline between you and God.
Right.
You know, there is a phone number. Anytime you can pick up the receiver and make a call and God will respond.
Mm.
And Swami would say, what is the phone number?
Mm.
Swami, the phone number is Om.
Om, right.
Om is the, right, right.
Now, so that is the morning prayer. I think Omkaram and Suprabhatam. And you know, it just strikes me that almost with the same religious fervor, we rush to the rooms and then wear our shoes and track pants and then we go on to the ground. It's like, it's almost like it's continuation of a prayer. You know, to think of it, we do it so religiously. You know, we come for the prayer, we do our Omkaram Suprabhatam, and there is, a tea, a coffee break at that time, milk.
Yeah.
But then you immediately go out for the games. So, you know, the spirit in which this is done, there is a sense of continuity. And if you are worshipping the Lord to awaken inside you, realize that this body itself is a temple of God and you need to maintain it in the best of health so that, you know, you can give your best.
There's one important point here, you know, when you say that the body is a temple of God. Often it is thought that when I am concerned with spirituality, and one of the penultimate or possibly ultimate stage in spirituality is you know that you are not the body. You are beyond the body, you are beyond the mind. So therefore you feel, why should I care for the body? It's one thing about not caring for the body, having realized the ultimate. But till you realize the ultimate, if you don't care for the body, you will not be able to dedicate your time and energy for spiritual pursuit. Because all the time and energy later you would have to spend in tending for your body.
Just putting it in perspective, think of a realized soul like Ramana Maharishi. He never missed his walks.
Mm-hmm.
Every day of his life, he would walk up the hill, Arunachala hill, and come down. And Swami has told us a couple of times, and some of the old devotees have seen Swami taking rounds inside his own room.
True.
A small room. Swami would walk inside his room. He would say, hey, kasarat che, exercise che. You should do exercise.
It's very true. I mean, as Arvind was saying, see, most of the time our disregard for the body is not because we are beyond the body, but because it's after all my body.
Yeah.
You know, it actually changes the attitude completely.
Correct.
See, Zafrika, you're here, Arvind, I will not treat your body badly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because we have that much of culture that if I'm going to harm your body, it becomes violence.
Correct.
But how will I then harm this body if I believe that this is not me, this is not my body,
right,
that has been given to me?
Correct. That's, you know, you have beautifully expanded our concept of non-violence. Non-violence is not just about not harming others, but not harming oneself also. You know, for instance, when, if I am regular in my exercises and fitness schedule, then only am I assured that I can have a body with which I can pursue my spiritual or academic pursuits. Otherwise, just imagine when is it easier to do meditation? When you are suffering from a severe bout of cough and fever, or when you are perfectly fit?
Right.
So in order to ensure that your meditation is wonderful, you better ensure that your body is also fine. And that is why I feel, you know, this kind of emphasis is entirely on balance. I was just imagining another analogy. You just think, suppose our academics is compared to the head, and our cultural activities is considered equated to the heart, and possibly our regular activities is compared to the stomach. Just imagine if all emphasis is placed on a head, imagine how the being would look. Like with a huge head and a tiny body, and that's ugly, right? We will consider that as an alien. Or imagine the other way. Yes. A huge stomach with one tiny head. I mean,
somebody very beautifully, one of the educationists said, you know, the modern day schools and colleges are creating beings for whom the rest of the body is support system for the head. You know, it's only life support for the brain. That's not how, you know, individual citizens are meant to be.
Exactly. Yeah, and in the same way, I feel if we say, you know, there are institutions which have an emphasis on games, culture. I know of some people who are sports people, and irrespective of how well they fare, they are pushed ahead. I have nothing against having a specific sports academy or a sports culture. But that doesn't mean that even if a person get, say, 20% in academics, you just set an easy paper or push them ahead, giving them 80%, making them appear like all-rounders. See, all said and done, though equal emphasis given to all the things, in our university, when we study, we will see in our own class itself, we have some people who are academically oriented, who are topping there, doing good there. We have sportsmen who do well there. And so you see, it is, each one develops based on his interests and what do you say?
Ability.
But from the system point of view, equal importance given to all.
That's right.
The thing. So, otherwise what will happen is, you will end up, imagine in the body analogy, imagine a huge heart or a huge liver or a huge head. It's not good. At this...
Yeah, I mean, that balance what you're saying is so important. And you know, when we were in school, I think it still continues to this day, after this one round or two rounds of jogging, we invariably had Surya Namaskar, where some of our teachers would, you know, we would have somebody showing the step, and there are 12 postures of Surya Namaskar,
right,
which are so scientific and which are so good for your health. And it's preceded with a chant, and where you offer your gratitude to the sun god. And the Shanti Vedika ground is such that, you know, on the galleries on which ladies sit, generally you, when you're doing Surya Namaskar there, you see the rising sun in the east. It's so beautiful. You know, these are memories you just can't take away from me. You know, early morning you take 1.5 rounds or 2 rounds of jogging, and then you go on those galleries.
Absolutely.
And
because even as you're saying this, I remember what you know, the teacher in Vrindavan used to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Because invariably, I mean, early in the morning, you're woken up, you're made to wear your, you know, jogging gear, and you, And it's really cold. Vrindavan can get really bitterly cold.
Especially in December.
Right. And that time, you know, some of the teachers used to tell us, you know, it is quite irritating that you're having to do all this. But just look around. It's so beautiful. Mm. Just take in this beauty, because sometime in future, you're going to look back at these days and say, oh, so beautiful. They were so wonderful when we went out for a jog early in the morning in the fog. I mean, it's so really true. The way you're describing it, you really can make out how important it is.
Yeah, because that memory sits so clear in my mind. After Suprabhatam, then you're allowed an hour or so of games. Some people are interested in cricket, some people basketball, some people volleyball. And for the benefit of the listeners, we have an excellent indoor stadium now. But in those days, also we had a lot of facilities. We had courts for different games. And based
if
on...
If I could quickly go through them, the cricket, football, volleyball, basketball, a gymnasium where if you would like to work out, you can work out, table tennis, shuttle badminton, ball badminton, you know, all these.
mean, that's squash, I think, now.
Now we have got even squash courts. So basically, you choose, but, you know, it is compulsory that you have to choose something of your choice.
No,
I remember there was this rule that at the beginning of the year, you definitely have to give a choice of two games that you are going to pick up and improve. And you know, when you say improve, the competition is not somebody else, it's your own self. If you didn't know how to hold a cricket bat, by the end of 2 years, you know how to hold a cricket bat, great, you have improved. So it's not about how better than the other, it's not a competition based, but it is based on you bettering what you do. So you have to pick up two. At the same time, I don't know, in Parthi it was not so much, but in Vrindavan, you are not allowed to pick up more than three games also. You know, we don't want such kind of all-rounders who... See, what can happen is definitely a person who has an aptitude for games can possibly do well at four or five games. That is there. But it was also said that no, because you are not here to excel in all the games. You have the capacity to excel in five sports. I remember this very vividly because we had one senior, his name is Venkat Narasimhan. A brilliant table tennis player, superb footballer, terrific volleyball player, plays basketball, a good bowler, cricket. So when we have this house selection, you know, everyone, I think he was your classmate, Prem.
Right.
Everyone would like to pick this guy because by picking up one, you're getting multiple talents in multiple games, which your house can win. But when this rule, capping rule came, it was very terrible. They said, how? Now he has to choose which two games he'll play. Two team games and one individual game. He plays tennis well, he plays table tennis well. But you pick up one individual game. He plays four games, group games well, but you pick only two. Because, you see, though we encourage sports, our objective here is not to create sportsmen. Though we encourage academic, our objective is not to create academicians. Though we encourage spirituality, our thing is not to create a yogi. A yogi in the sense the world views.
A renunciant.
Our objective is to create balanced personalities who will have the ability to excel in whatever field they wish to pursue because of the strong foundation and grounding that is there. And a strong self-confidence that results from that. You know, so with that as the emphasis, the whole schedule is developed. And yeah, coming back, we complete morning jogging and games at around 7:30, after which it is breakfast time.
When you talk about exercises, when you talk about, of course, we were mentioning the facilities. But more than anything else, the memories which come is, you know, Swami coming and standing there. And Swami would tell, you know, you should be fit. And Swami sometimes would say, see me at this age, how I am. Yeah. And Swami would say, see, one of our teachers was saying, you know, Swami would tell, see, if you look from behind, you can see Swami's V-shape. You know, Swami would say even that, and Swami would say, I'm not having a pot.
Yeah.
You know, even before you could think of anything else, Swami said, this is the fold of the dhoti.
Yeah, he used to say that. He would stand up and he would say, see, I'm telling you all that you should be thin and slim. And look at me, but this is not my stomach.
Right.
This, I have to tie my dhoti very tight because in devotion, people pull my dhoti.
Right, you know, that is the beautiful memories which we have of Swami inspiring us to, you know, take care of our bodies.
My life is my message, that's what it is.
Very true.
At every stage.
I remember in Thrai, I mean, some of these things might be really very, very surprising for some of our listeners. Because, you know, we put Swami in the pedestal of a spiritual master.
Mm.
You know, that is actually a difference between a spiritual master and an avatar. An avatar comes to live with you, right? And when you say live with you, he wants to live with everything that is you,
right.
Not just the spiritual aspect of you.
Mm.
Because Swami would come, and I remember in vacation time, Swami would tell how often you have to wash your pillow cover,
mm-hmm.
how often you have to cut your nails, and why it is important to, you know, keep your nails clean. How,
in fact,
some of those things.
I think there is an entire section of a discourse where he says how you should sleep in the first place.
True.
How you should sleep, which side you should turn, or how you should face upwards, where your hands should be,
curled, right.
How you should not curl. Because you would have had dinner and the food should get digested. Absolutely scientific, but there is a way of sleeping. And in which way you should sleep so that you don't start snoring. I mean, every detail Swami has given.
Speaking of details, we had reached breakfast time. I remember, you know, Swami saying that breakfast, or for that matter anything that you eat, shouldn't eat till the brim of your stomach, you know. Half your stomach should have food, quarter stomach water, and quarter air.
Empty.
Mm. In fact, Swami would say the ease with which you sit down to have food. That's another thing. Huh? Mm. All our food, we would not have it on dining tables and chairs. We would sit on the ground and eat. You know, you sit cross-legged on the ground and eat, that's like an automatic defense or automatic, like pokayoke. Japanese have the system of pokayoke, where by default you can't commit an error.
Okay.
For example, there's a machine that cuts. Now, while cutting, there's a chance that you put your hand and cut your hand, right? So they make it in such a manner that in order to activate that cutter, you have to press two buttons, which are located in opposite directions, and you have to use both your hands spread out to the sides to push both the buttons. So unless you have a third hand, you can't cut your hand there. That's called pokayoke, where by default you can't make. Sit on the ground and eat. I assure you, you can't overeat. Because once you're starting to overeat, you just can't bend down to receive that food into your mouth. And, you know, you have to transport the food from the plate till your mouth. It becomes so difficult to do that. By default, these things, some of these practices are such that it doesn't allow you to overeat. You know, even if you overeat, possibly you can get off a chair. You overeat, you will see how difficult it is.
It becomes a five-step process. Getting up from...
Yeah, you first get up, take support from one hand. Swami would say the way you sit down. We usually sit down because, you know, in our hand, we have the plate that is filled with the food that we are going to eat. So we just cross our legs and just go down straight. Swami would say the way you go down and sit, the same way you have to get up. Then you know you have eaten the correct amount. If you overeat, you know you have to put your left hand down for support. Your right hand is soiled. You have to pick up your plate.
Correct.
So, as you said, if it becomes a five-step process, you have overeaten. You know, in all these things, it is so beautiful, these things that we have learned, which sometimes we miss. As we get into corporate lives, into our modern lives, we may have a very posh dining table, very comfortable dining chairs, but we miss these kind of things that have made us who we are actually because of our hostel life.
The thing is, let's say you're in the hostel and there are fixed times when you go out for darshan.
Mm-hmm.
So if you said morning you go for a walk, you go for a jog, it's fine. But even in Kodaikanal, Swami has to be very particular that at the time when you have to go for a walk, you have to go for
you
a walk.
You have to go for
even when, you know, instead of walking, you're actually going to be sitting with Swami. But Swami would say, no, you have to go because it's important, necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with the food which you
especially
eat.
The Kodaikanal food. You better go for a walk.
And you know, other thing about having a schedule like this, Prem, you just see, you were saying, I keep coming back to that, about very little time being there for academics. Now, in this schedule, where do you find time for video games and television? You know, rather than telling a child, don't watch TV, it's not good, don't do video games, just say that this is a schedule, follow, after this you have time, do anything. I remember, you know, in our whole, now of course, the bad habit is back. I do watch television. But in the summer vacations when I would go home, if I am able to follow the schedule, really, I would not feel that I am missing anything. In the hostel, did we really feel that we missed television? I don't think so. I never felt that I am missing television, I am missing watching this or watching that. Of course, here and there, now and then, they would show television, we would have movie shows, but we never felt that not watching something, not watching daily, not watching weekly, we are ever lacking or being kept out of something in our life.
Very true. In fact, the care with which Swami set the routine, equal and more care was given to what kind of food the students should have. In fact, recently when we were we had the chance of speaking to Munni Aunty, the principal of primary school, we were students there, but we never knew the details. Swami had instructed them on how much water can be mixed in milk. What is the percentage of water that should be mixed with milk when you give it to children of this age? What is the percentage it should be mixed when you give it to slightly elder children? To that detail. And then what kind of pulses they should have. And of course, many students didn't like the sprouts. And they would show it in under the mat. And you would hold it in the hand and hold the plate. Auntie would stand near the wash basin and say, open your hand, show me your hand.
No wasting food.
No wasting food. We never knew. But it was under specific instructions from Swami that they should be given sprouts. They should be given milk. And then two items for breakfast. One item is not enough. Some people may like one item, some people may not like one item. So you should have two items for breakfast, and that is still followed.
And you know, Sai Prakash, the point you said about that wastage, this is something brilliant I feel Swami has done, you know. I can honestly say one thing, whether other things I follow or not, I can cross my heart and say, I never waste food. Or I rarely waste food. In some exceptional circumstances, I waste. Otherwise, I never take into my plate more than what I can eat. I'm saying this because in a hotel when I go and you order, say, a South Indian thali or a North Indian thali, I feel so terribly guilty even if one of the items is going waste. If I don't like it, I will try to ask, will somebody want this? And try to somehow consume and finish it so nothing goes waste. It has so deeply got embedded into my day-to-day DNA. I'm saying this because I have definitely seen within my family, outside, where, you know, children, they are told it's fine that if you don't like it, you leave aside. Recently, I hosted a family at home and their child, she was about 11 years old and it was very tasty food. In fact, she said it's very tasty. I love it. Because it's so tasty, she took so much of it. And in the end, she was not able to eat it. She just left it and walked off. And when I asked, you are wasting this, he says, yeah, I'm not able to eat it. Without the slightest prick or as if what's wrong in wasting the food. You know, when we grow older, I'm sure many adults don't waste food. It's terrible when in some cases adults are also wasting food. But mostly you don't waste because you realize the larger issues. No, without, it's not that I didn't waste food because there is global poverty or because there are people starving in Africa. Not like that. It just became part of my DNA.
It's just not right
to waste.
That's all.
Even if you have an excess, even if there's no shortage, you may be living in a posh locality where there's no beggar around, where there's everyone is well fed. Even in such a circumstance, it's a crime to waste.
You don't have the right to waste food. Yeah.
Don't have the right to waste food.
Talking about milk, just remembered Swami's sense of humor. In a particular interview to, I think, primary school teacher, Swami was saying that milk, having it absolutely thick is not good for health.
Correct.
He said, especially for children, you'll have to mix water. And Swami said, Swami said that pure milk without mixing water is even poisonous to health. And then immediately Swami added, you don't have to worry, the milkman takes care.
That's right. And also, every session starts with this prayer. Every food session starts with Brahmarpanam, and that itself is, so beautiful. Swami has made it a part of the routine that you have to start with the food prayer. Brahmarpanam, Brahmavir. If you actually, to think of it, when we did another series on Swami's discourses, Swami says, food is not what you ate through your mouth alone. Everything is food. What you see is food. What you hear is food. What you smell is food. And he said, chant Brahmarpanam before you take your food. So, if you live that spirit of Brahmarpanam in every food that you take in, Swami, what I am seeing, I am offering to you. Brahmarpanam, you are the one who is seeing. You are the one who is seen.
And you are the act of seeing.
Over, you don't need to do anything else. And Swami asks, Aham Vaishvana Robhutva, who is this Brahman? He says, I am there within you. These are two shlokas taken from different chapters of Bhagavad Gita, but the master that Bhagwan is, he put both of them together. It's like, okay, Brahmarpanam, you are offering to Brahman, I am offering everything, all this food, but then who is the one? Where is that Brahman? I am within you. Aham Vaish, I am the form of this fire, of digestive fire, where I digest all the food that you are giving me.
Swami, you beautifully say, Lopat Nunchi Jawab Vostundi.
Jawab Vostundi. He said the answer comes from within. Aham Vaishwan, I am within you and I am going to die. And I have seen, you know, many of my classmates and many of the students, you know, it may not be possible to stick to many things that you have been doing in the hostel, but this one thing stays. You go in the hotel, you go in front of anybody, we don't shy away closing our eyes for a minute, just chanting the prayer and then starting. Because it has just become a part of us.
Exactly. and you know, one interesting little joke, like, if I can say so, there is this food prayer we are taught in Balvikas. You know, Harir Data, Harir Bhokta, Harir Annam Prajapatihi, Harir Vipra Sharirastu Bhongte Bhojayate Harihi. That is the food prayer. So, as Brother Sai Prakash said, Brahmarpanam is such a beautiful thing. We can have multiple satsangs on the meaning and of Brahmarpanam itself.
Yes.
So there was this child and we were trying to impress on that child what is the grand significance of Brahmarpanam. So when I asked what is a food prayer, the child immediately says Harir Data, Harir Bhokta, Harir Anna. I said, oh, okay, that's what you are taught. You know there is Brahmarpanam also. Yeah, Brahmarpanam. The child knows even Brahmarpanam. Says, what is the difference between Brahmarpanam and Harir Data? He says, if the food in front of you is very tasty, go for Haridata. Just be done with it.
Shorter prayer. The shortest I have heard from one of my classmates is, sorry, Brahma. I'm eating it today.
You know, in fact, Swami would also say, you can even say, what is that? Annam Brahma, Raso Vishnu, Bhongto Devo Maheshwara. It just means that the food I'm eating is God. The essence that I'm going to get by eating, that's also God. The person who is consuming is also God. So, you know, jokes aside, it doesn't matter on the length of the prayer. What is important is, as we shall see, even throughout the day, just like in the morning, even when you're jogging, even when you're, and during breakfast, before we do anything, a kind of reminder for ourselves to be aware of the ultimate purpose why we are doing all this. That helps not only in your college days or your student days, but even when you go out to the large world, it helps to refocus every now and then as to why am I doing what am I doing. Because many times we forget that part and we just continue doing things monotonously like robots.
You know, talking about food before we move on, many of these schedules and many of these practices were actually quite fluid. You know, Swami would many times change some of these things. When we speak to teachers who've been in Swami's hostels over a period of time, a lot of these things have been changed in between, so that, you know, probably one batch of students needed that kind of a concession. I remember once when we were speaking to some students, I think in the 80s when they were in the school, it so happened that one particular batch had about 80% of North Indians. Okay, and who were all coming to South for the first time. So, absolutely alien to the cuisine of the South. So, it seems one day, about a week or 10 days after they joined the hostel, Swami comes out and Swami asks them, so what did you have for breakfast today? And the boy said, Swami, sambar. Okay. And Swami said, what is there for lunch today? He said, Swami, sambar. And what was there for dinner yesterday? And apparently that day dinner also was sambar, and they said, Swami, sambar. So immediately Swami realized that these boys were getting something which was totally outside their range of taste or whatever. So immediately Swami called the person who was in charge of the hostel kitchen, called him inside the interview room, and for the next 1 week, Swami gave a menu. And which had no rice, no sambar. Okay. And Swami gave them and said, Swami then told, after 1 week, you intersperse it with the rest of the menu and gradually bring it to their normal menu. You know, even some of these things, now to think, that's why I said when you talk about rituals that remind you of something of the past, probably the students of these days, even in Swami's hostel, these are all just another schedule. You know, you might be following another schedule in some other college. You're following this schedule in this college. But when you stop and think that this was a schedule actually Swami painstakingly made.
No, also with
Swami
the spirit
put his
of
energy,
love.
Right?
With the spirit
exactly.
of love.
I mean, with that idea that, you know, this is good for you, you know, literally handpicking. Mm. Yeah, you have to go for jogging. Yeah, you have to do this yoga. You'll have to do this prayer. In fact, every prayer, Brahmarpanam, I remember once when you were talking to one of the lecturers, he was telling that one day Swami told Lechams, he said, it'll be nice if we have a night prayer.
Oh.
Right, you know, yeah, you have to pray, but what do you pray? Then Swami expressed to the teachers, it'll be nice if we have a night prayer. Why don't you all come up with a night prayer?
So nice.
Right, and the night prayer which we have now has been picked up from one of the verses in the Vedas. So it's almost like Swami did not say that this is the thing, follow it.
Right.
You know, this is the regime, you follow it.
That's what, everything came
was evolved
came
lovingly. You know?
With the negotiation as well.
And we are running out of time. It's almost 1:53 in our studios. I think, Prem, definitely we shall be carrying on the same discussion next week also.
Sure. Right? I think a lot of subtleties are there which probably...
A lot more. In trying to conclude today's discussion, there was this youth leader who approached me and he said, we are planning on a Parthi Yatra, a pilgrimage to Parthi. I said, okay. And he said, all the people who are coming are youth members. I said, fantastic. And then he said, what our plan is, when we come to Parthi, we want to follow the schedule that the boys follow in the hostel.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I was very thrilled at this idea, and I was also thrilled at its novelty, and I was also thinking, why on earth didn't this strike me, you know? He said, because... He quoted this very sentence that Swami has said that hostel schedule is the only sadhana my students need to do.
Mm.
And what's good enough for his students is good enough for us also. That's what he said.
Mm.
And I felt, yeah, correct. Because Swami, as we started off, Swami himself has defined who his student is. You do not become a Sai student by becoming a student of Sri Satsai Institute of Higher Learning. Sri Satsai Institute of Higher Learning just gives you a opportunity, a better chance of becoming a Sai student. A Sai student is one who is a student of Sai, a student of his teachings. And therefore, they said, we all wish to become Sai students, so we would like to follow the hostel schedule. And having, they came and they did it, and having done that, many wrote back saying, wow, you know, this was my benefit, this is what I got. So they had so many takeaways from following the hostel schedule. In fact, I thought, in future, if any youth member says, you know, from many countries, Malaysia, I know for sure, Canada, some of these places, they come together as youth, as a Parthi Yatra. They want to do some, you know, spend 10 days in pilgrimage and then go back. So when they ask me, what is it that we can do in the Yatra, I thought this is a good idea to give. Here's a hostel schedule, try to follow it for 10 days. And going one step deeper, I just felt, why advise others? Can I follow the hostel schedule? Because I myself am not doing it. I'm possibly following only 70% of the hostel schedule. Can I follow it every day of my life? If not, at least like the people from a Parthi Yatra, can I follow it for 1 week in a month, 1 day in a week? Because whether we do it once or twice or 10 times, it's like an investment. The more you do, the more you will benefit. And even the slightest you do, you will derive that much benefit. So I really feel, I really hope that this discussion, if not anybody else, it will at least inspire me to start following the hostel schedule a little bit more.
In fact, before you wind up, there is one statement which Swami made and which Sahani sir, Sanjay Sahani sir from the Brindavan campus would repeatedly tell us.
Mm-hmm.
He would say, doesn't matter what you do the rest of the day. Swami was telling them, I take personal responsibility to make sure that you will be rewarded amply for the spiritual pursuit you do in early morning hours. He said, any effort that you make in those early hours, the Brahma Muhurtam time, I take personal responsibility.
Swami said that
there is no going back. It is bound to succeed. There's no question of failure.
Swami would say that, you know, any good or any spiritual activity you do during the day,
mm-hmm.
it's like your current bank account.
Okay, yes.
It
yes.
keeps coming in and going.
Mm.
But what you do early morning, it is like the fixed deposit.
Yes.
It will not be touched unless you are really critically in need of it.
That's
right. It's completely in God's care. You cannot encash it when you want.
That's right.
And Swami said, so whatever you do in that early morning is in my custody. Yes. And when you need it, I will release it for your benefit.
I will release it.
So probably with that, we will conclude this session. Dear listeners, hope you enjoyed our discussion today. We'll be continuing next week. We hope that Sai Prakash will join us if he is free. We offer this most humble effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet. Thank you for being with us. On the other side of this song, you'll be joined with by Chandu for his program Love to Love.
जिसके सर पर हाथ हो तेरा कौन बिगाड़े उसकी हर पल उसके साथ है बाबा हर पल रक्षा उसकी सब दुख दूर करे साई नाम सुमिरन जो भी करे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे भव सागर से पार उतारे जन्म जन्म के पाप हरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम साई राम साई राम कोई मनोरथ मन में बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए कोई मनोरथ मन में बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए इन चरणों में मन चाहा फल बिन मांगे मिल जाए साई बिगड़ी बात सवारे सुख संपत्ति भंडार भरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम साई राम साई राम तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी परति तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी साई बाबा इस धरती पर शिव शक्ति अवतारी जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा कौन किसी विपदा से डरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम साई राम
साई गंगा साई जमुना साई मथुरा काशी साई तो है घट घट वासी अजर अमर अविनाशी साई नाम ब्रह्मा साई नाम विष्णु साई नाम शिव शंकर